In mid-May 1945, the British Army sent six of its brand new Centurion tanks to Germany for trials as part of Operation Sentry. This excellent tank was well armoured and mounted a powerful 17-pounder gun.
It was everything the tank regiments could wish for. The trouble was, as was rapidly discovered, it was outmatched by a Soviet monster, the IS-3.
The IS-3 was a squat monster of a tank, with a hemispherical cast turret and a pike nose that maximised the effectiveness of its 110mm of armour. Its gun, the D-25T, in test firing, penetrated the glacis of a German Panther at 1,200 metres. The likelihood of having to face this tank in combat was growing. The Soviet Union, having annexed large parts of Eastern Europe at the end of the war, was showing every sign of aggressive intent towards the West, with massive armament programmes and episodes like the Berlin blockade.
The British Army needed its own better armed, more powerful equivalent, the Conqueror. In this film, we'll look at how it came about, its design, what it was like to fight and crew.
When that JS3 came out, I can remember, cool, crikey, you know, that's frightening, you know, so panic, what can we do?
And also we'll ask, was it better than the Soviet equivalent?
World War II is over and the Allies victorious. Tank design has advanced massively in 6 years to the point where the age of the universal tank, a tank able to fulfil a wide range of roles on the battlefield, is dawning. Centurion, one of the first of these, just misses the end of the war and will go on to be massively successful. But the appearance of IS-3 and a belief that the other side will be building heavy tanks in large numbers causes a sudden panic.
The Centurion Mark I, with its 17-pounder gun, 76mm armour, was outmatched by the IS-3, both in terms of firepower and armour protection. A rush began to develop a counter to the threat. Now, what was needed was a better armoured tank with a bigger gun that would sit a tactical bound behind the main force and be able to deal with the Soviet heavies.
This would produce some odd prototypes, such as the FV-4005, with its massive 183mm gun, the Conway and Carnarvon gun tanks, as well as some more practical offerings, like the US M103.
For the British Army, the solution was the vehicle I want to talk about today, the FV-214 Conqueror. Conqueror and the FV-200 series actually have their origins in the A-45 infantry support tank. Now, the development of that was begun in 1944, but the advent of the universal tank meant it wasn't needed any longer. The A-41 Centurion would do the job instead. So the chassis of the A-45 was adapted for use as the basis of a new heavy tank.
The FV-200 series was to have used a common hull for all purposes. Gun tank, self-propelled gun, armoured personnel carrier, armoured recovery vehicle, etc. The first gun tank design was the FV-201 of 55 tonnes, armed with a 20-pounder gun. In 1949, having seen what was happening on the other side of the Iron Curtain, it was decided to up gun to 120mm. As this caused delays, in 1952, the FV-201 hull was adapted to take a Centurion Mark II turret mounting a 17-pounder gun, and that resulted in the FV-221 Carnarvon Mark I. Another 21 were built with the Mark III 20-pounder turret as the Carnarvon Mark II. The Carnarvon never saw service, but was only used for chassis development work and in troop trials. Work on the 120mm turret continued, by 1954, it was ready to be fitted to the hull. The result was the FV-214 Conqueror, the first being produced in 1955. 20 Mark I and 165 Mark II Conquerors were built, including conversions of Carnarvon Mark IIs. Production ended in 1959.
There's no doubt that this is a tank with a hulking presence. Weighing 64 tonnes, armour up to 180mm thick, and with the L1 120mm gun. Up close, it is mighty impressive.
It also seems to show off its infantry tank heritage, particularly when you look at the road wheel arrangement. Eight pairs of small road wheels aside, rear drive sprocket and front idler. It's very reminiscent of the Churchill.
There is a difference, though. Conqueror uses the Horseman bogey suspension unit, and that's two road wheels plus a return roller per unit, rather than individual wheels with their own small spring.
The fact that the Horseman units could be readily changed made repairs from things like mine strikes simpler. Being externally mounted, the Horseman suspension doesn't take up space inside the vehicle either. The road wheels are steel, with a rubber buffer in between each pair. The design made losing a track less likely, and the width of the track itself gave Conqueror good cross-country performance for a tank of its weight and size.
Conqueror's gun is the Ordnance QF L1A1 120mm.
It's a rifled gun designed to fire either APDS or HESH. The APDS round had a muzzle velocity of 1,433 metres a second and would penetrate 120 millimetres of 55-degree sloped armour at 914 metres. The APDS round, predecessor to the modern fin round, APFSDS, has a pot-shaped sabot to guide it down the barrel, which then drops away, leaving the tungsten alloy round to travel onto the target. The HESH round, always a favourite of the British Army, had the advantage of longer range, 2,600 metres as opposed to 1,800 for APDS. It could be used as a general purpose high explosive round, or, impacting on armour, would blast a scab of metal off the inside of the target vehicle with huge destructive effect. Another advantage was that, unlike APDS, the power of the round has nothing to do with its velocity, so it's equally lethal at all ranges.
It does, however, have roughly half the muzzle velocity of APDS, so the gun has to be laid on the HESH setting, which is slightly elevated. That means it's a lob, and it makes it actually less accurate, and it's more difficult to hit a moving target. The Conqueror's turret is quite a complex shape as these things go. It's got a wide curved front, and then quite a substantial bustle to the back. It's cast steel, but there's one very useful feature. Inlet into it here, there's a large steel plate. Take that off, and it enables you to service the gun and its mounts. Moving towards the middle, there are hatches for the loader and the gunner, and then at the back is the fire control turret. We'll talk a bit more about this when we're inside, but the fire control turret is part of the hunter-killer system. It's electronically powered and it can rotate 360 degrees independently of the turret itself. And then the commander, using linkages, can pre-lay the gun onto a second target while the gunner is dealing with the first. Alternatively, he can take over and lay and fire the main gun. The hunter-killer system was unique to Conqueror at the time, but it's since become common to most main battle tanks. On the side of the fire control turret, the commander has got a mounting for an L3A1 30 caliber machine gun. That takes 200 or 250 round belts, and there are two spare belts kept inside the turret itself. The back of the turret, there's a large storage basket, and then this is the cable reel continuous connection. That is used for tank-to-tank comms in Liga or in static positions, meaning it obviates the use of the radio. At the back of the tank, there's also an infantry telephone.
The engine is a Rolls-Royce Meteor M120 V12 petrol engine, giving 810 horsepower, much the same engine as in Centurion, and, as many people know, a down-rated version of the Merlin Aero engine. Two different gearboxes were fitted, the Z52 and the Z52R. Both had five forward and two reverse gears, though the driver had to be aware of which he was dealing with, as the gear layouts were reversed. Selecting first on one would select reverse on the other, with potentially dangerous results. Maximum speed for the Conqueror was 22 miles an hour. Not particularly fast, but as we previously said, its cross-terrain performance, like that of the Churchill, was very good. Better, in fact, than that of the Centurion.
Conqueror was always plagued by reliability issues. I mean, it was fundamentally underpowered for its 64-ton weight. The long-suffering Remy light aid detachments found that their armoured recovery variants coped well enough. But especially on rough ground, the gun tanks, carrying more weight, constantly misfired, stalled. No amount of tuning would seem to make the slightest difference to it. Two marks of Conqueror were produced. The Mark I, which is the museum example, has three driver's periscopes and mufflers on the exhausts. This is a Mark II, and this has a single driver's periscope, a larger fume extractor, and straight through exhausts, no mufflers. This, as you can see, this is a gate guard. Most of the surviving Conquerors that still exist, there are one or two in collections, but most of them are either gate guards or range wrecks. And this poor old lady is deteriorating, having been outside for decades. In fact, for quite a number of years, this was the home of Stanley the Cat. This video has been made possible by our supporters on Patreon, our YouTube members, and our super thanks donors. Please join them if you can, and support the Tank Museum. And thanks for watching. Getting inside the tank, we're going to look at the Commander's Fire Control Turret first. The hatches are all the same. They're all circular, lift and swing type. That's actually quite an advantage because it's got a lower profile. It's not so obvious to a potential enemy that you've got a hatch open.
We're now in the Commander's Fire Control Turret and just running through his controls. On either side are two mounts for episcopes. In the centre is the Commander's periscope, and that gives him a broad target acquisition. And then below that, you have the rangefinder and the main gun and machine gun sight, and that has 6x magnification. Just to the right of that is the traverse control. Remember, this fire control turret is electronically powered, although it didn't always work. And then just the side of that, there is the azimuth that tells him which way the turret and the main gun is pointing. Now, the fire control turret, this is something very new and innovative. And it's a standard thing with main battle tanks these days. So Conqueror is the first to have this system. What it meant is that the tank commander could pre-lay the gun onto a new target while the gunner is dealing with an earlier one. It also meant the tank commander could just take over from the gunner and aim and fire the gun himself. The way this worked is the commander acquired the target and measured the range, laying the gunner onto it. The gunner would then make the fine adjustments and take the shot. While he was doing that, the commander could move on to the next target and repeat the process. Alternatively, the commander could do it all by himself, including aiming and firing the main gun or coaxial machine gun with his own sights and controls. The Conqueror was the first British tank to incorporate a rangefinder and this hunter-killer system, both of which are standard elements of tank gunnery these days. The disadvantages, I mean, if I'm honest, sitting in this fire control turret is a bit like sitting in a dustbin. You are cut off from the rest of the crew, you're cut off from the turret. There was a major problem. It's electrically operated. So it's got 360-degree traverse, but there's no manual system if the electrical system goes down, which it often did. The other thing is just the sheer isolation. I mean, I'm sat here. If my gunner is about to do something stupid, I can't kick him in the small of the back with my boot to let him know about it. So that's, you know, that's one of the problems. Very small, very cramped. And as I said, the electrical system, if it goes down, you know, that's it, you're banjaxed. We're lucky enough now to be able to talk to former Sergeant John Chappell, who commanded Conqueror during its brief time in service.
I think you were Conqueror commander, weren't you?
Yeah.
So you were in the fire control turret.
That's right, yes.
At the back. We've been inside Conqueror.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to admit, fire control turret to me is like almost climbing into a dustbin. Did you find the isolation?
Funny enough, I was going to say, I mean, I was in Centurions for years, and you were a family, the crew, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But you climbed into the Conqueror, and you were in that little thing on the top, fire control turret thing. You were sitting in there. The loader was somewhere down there. The gunner was somewhere down there. And the driver, well, God knows where he was, if you see what I mean. And I didn't like him, and a lot didn't, because you were so isolated.
Yes.
You know, you couldn't lean over and talk to the gunner or the operator, anything. You were just stuck up on a mountain, isolated. Yeah. You know.
So all your comms with the crew, basically through your headset.
Yeah, all of it.
So it really
is
very isolated. Yeah,
and if it backed up, well, you know, that was it.
Yeah. So now in the main part of the turret, in the fighting compartment, I'm sitting in the gunner's seat. Behind me is the commander's fire control turret. And then over on the other side, over on the left-hand side of the turret, is the loader. In the middle, the most obvious thing is the breech of the 120mm gun and the recoil cage. Now, at first glance, it seems sort of deceptively roomy in here, unlike an awful lot of main battle tanks. But then you realise that most of it is taken up with things that do stuff. So over here, I've got the gunnery controls, elevation and traverse power controls, hand elevation control. The gunner's sight is missing. That's been taken out. But there is here just his headrest. And then over on the right-hand side, as I said, there is the loader, and his ready racks are tucked into the turret, heading back into the bustle behind him. Without doubt, the least enviable job in a Conqueror crew was that of the loader. He had the task of loading either a 20-pound APDS or a 35-pound HESH into the gun, plus brass case propellant charge of up to £50 on demand. 35 of these projectiles, plus their propellant charges, were stored in and around the turret and the hull. During the design process, and to ease the loader's burden, a company called Mullins, who actually specialised in the production of cigarette vending machines, and yes, such a thing used to exist, were asked to come up with two things. First of all, an automatic rammer that would push the rounds into the breech, and the second, a spent case ejector. The first was not adopted, the second was, and it caused untold trouble. Behind the breech of the gun, this large and really quite unwieldy piece of apparatus is the Mullins ejector. But to me, it looks a bit sort of jerry-built. There's a Perspex screen to stop cases bouncing off the top of the breech, that sort of thing. It didn't work very well. Now, the idea was that a spent case would drop onto a rail, and that would trigger a micro switch, which would operate the mechanism to eject the case through this port in the side of the turret. But it really didn't work very well. Most of the time, the round would either fall off, sometimes it fell on top of the breech and jammed between the turret roof and the breech itself, or the whole mechanism would come to a juddering halt, leaving this hatch open, and that's an ideal invitation to a Soviet infantryman with a grenade. There was a hand crank, a manual override, that actually took 5 minutes to operate.
When it worked, apparently, it was good. But the gun fires, a great big brass cartridge, red hot, drops in the bottom. What am I going to do with it? He's got to try and lift it up and shove it out of the hatch, which means he's got to have his hatch open, obviously. Or there's a little hand thing to wind it up, you know, and ages winding it up, which then opens a little hatch and it drops out.
Yeah.
But this was it, you know.
The driver's position is at the front of the hull on the right. We have two tiller bars with the gear stick situated between the driver's legs. At his feet is the clutch on the left, brake in the centre, and the accelerator on the right. Other instruments include hand throttle, battery and generator switches, fuel, temperature and speed gauges, and a gun position indicator. The driver's seat was adjustable for height and position, allowing the driver to operate head out or with the hatch closed. This compartment to the left of the driver was used for ammunition stowage. 25 propellant cases accessed through a circular hatch.
The petrol injection engine, yeah. I think it was about 800 horsepower, yeah. And it went well. I mean, I driving it, great, you know. I mean, you were still double declutching and all that, but if you drove the Conqueror, everybody got out of your way, you know. No, but driving, it was quite good. It was a bit noisy, and obviously with the metal tracks on the road, the noise was horrendous. But on driving, the mechanic side of it seemed to be all right. I mean, perhaps some fitters might have a different idea.
Summing up, the Conqueror was impressive, but unreliable.
The product of a panic generated by the now infamous first sighting of IS-3, Conqueror was the most successful product of a design process that produced oddities like the Conway and Carnarvon gun tanks, and bizarre experiments like FV-4005. The tank was well armoured and had a good gun. Innovative elements included a rangefinder and the groundbreaking hunter-killer system. But the problems were isolation of the tank commander, an inefficient spent case ejection system, and a lack of reliability, though good cross-country performance. In the event, the problem it was designed to solve effectively disappeared. Soviet heavy tanks were not produced in the expected numbers, and the upgunning of Centurion, first a 20-pounder, later to 105mm, made it able to hold its own. Conqueror only saw service with BAOR from 1955 to 66, and it was finally comprehensively replaced by Chieftain, the British Army's main battle tank concept.
The question that we'll thankfully never know the answer to is how Conqueror would have fared if the Cold War had got hot.
How do you think Conqueror would have fared against a JS-3?
The trouble, I don't know. The trouble is, you know, the JS-3 was so low, it could be sitting in the bushes and he'd probably get a couple of Centurions first before the Conqueror had a chance to get at it. But luckily, we never had to work it out, so it's all guesswork, really. We got the impression it was a bit too complicated, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't simple, like the old Centurion. And I didn't like them, quite honestly. No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Conqueror never faced off against its Warsaw Pact equivalent in any of the proxy wars that were fought around the world. However, the era of the heavy tank, relying on bigger and bigger armament, was well and truly over.
Thanks for watching. Do hope you've enjoyed this film. If you did, please like, subscribe, and if you can, support us on Patreon.